Sometimes people drop dead, as they say, out of the blue. SUD, it's called, sudden unexplained death. Or sudden cardiac arrest, SCA. It's a terrible phenomenon that's left families struck by grief, so many of them, and also by worry. Could it happen to someone else in the whānau? What went wrong that they should maybe look out for? Waikato cardiologist Dr. Martin Stiles is the lead author of an international and world best practice blueprint out now in two medical journals for investigating SUD and SCA. Bottom line, it's aimed at helping family members not suffer the same fate as their loved ones whom they've seen suddenly die. Martin is Director of Electrophysiology at Waikato Hospital and an Associate Professor at Auckland University's Waikato Clinical School. Good morning.
Kia ora, Jim.
Kia ora. We wouldn't, most of us, have been aware that October is Sudden Cardiac Death Awareness Month. So the timing for this new research of yours couldn't be better, really. We think it wouldn't happen to us, but I've known of two people it could have happened to. And a big fright can do it, yes, as well as a medical condition. People can just topple over.
Yes, there's a number of conditions that we look at, and you know, without getting into the jargon of it, there are certain conditions that might come out when somebody's exerting themselves. So, and particularly with swimming, and so sometimes a unexplained death in a strong swimmer does raise alarm bells. As do they have a heart rhythm condition that led them to become unconscious in the water? And then there are other conditions where there are certain situations such as a fright, an unexpected visitor or anything out of the ordinary can trigger a nasty heart rhythm. And, you know, we tell those people perhaps they might not like to have alarm clocks next to the bed or their mobile phone next to the bed or, you know, to minimise the chances of this. But, of course, you can't remove surprise from your life entirely.
Yes, no, you can't. I understand younger adults can be susceptible. They're not bulletproof.
Even children, Jim, you know, the group that we're particularly interested in are the ages of 1 to 40. So less than 1 year old is generally classified as a cot death.
Yeah.
And over the age of 35 or 40, you know, the environmental influence that we experience during our lives begins to take a greater role than the genetic influence that we're dealt. So over the age of 40, generally coronary disease becomes quite prevalent, and we don't often spend a lot of time in the older age groups as we would do for the younger.
Yes. The paper you've published is groundbreaking. It's a guide. In layperson's language, it's a guide for practitioners from across medical disciplines for what to do when a sudden death occurs.
That's right. So the idea of this is what we call an expert consensus statement. So it has 28 authors, and they come from 13 countries. Gee. Across five continents. Within this group, we have cardiologists, paediatricians, genetic counsellors, pathologists, clinical geneticists, and even a patient advocate. And between the 28 of us, through multiple Zoom calls across different time zones, as you can probably imagine, we've come together to produce what we think is a best practice document on how to best investigate people in whom they have a sudden cardiac arrest and survive, or they die suddenly and there's no explanation.
And with these sudden deaths, other family members are often at risk for the same condition.
That's right. Well, that's the thing that motivates us, I think, to find the answers. It's tragic when somebody dies suddenly, but I do work with some families who've had multiple sudden deaths across families. So, for instance, I had a meeting in one of our peripheral hospitals where we had a large whānau that had many sudden deaths. I drew up a family tree, actually took across two whiteboards, very large families, and we just, you know, just mapped out the family tree. And then I basically said, well, who has died in your family? And you may be familiar with the idea of a family tree with the women as circles and the squares as men and the lines drawn between them. And the standard way of denoting somebody's died is a diagonal line through that circle or square. And so when we went through this family tree and put through all the family members who had died, and you stood back from the family tree, it was quite daunting. You can see that nearly half their family was dead, and at a young age.
So a specialist team would assemble to scrutinise the moments leading up to the event, the person's medical family history, and their genetic predispositions. What does this information tell us?
Yeah, so that's right. We would look at the circumstances about around the sudden death. Did the person die in their sleep? Did they die on exercise? Was there something unusual about that? Were they sick with a fever, for instance? And then we might obviously look at the family history. Are there other suspicious sudden deaths within the family, or even collapses, or what we call syncope? And so we'd start with that basis, and then we'd, if it was a survivor, we would be doing things like ultrasounds of the heart, maybe an MRI scan, maybe some pharmacological challenges with adrenaline or other drugs to see if we can bring out an arrhythmia. And if in the case of a deceased person, there would hopefully be a post-mortem, although we don't always get post-mortems in everyone that we wish to. And also we would like the pathologist to save some genetic material so that we can do subsequent genetic testing. And generally we try and arrive at a clinical diagnosis, because if you can have a clinical diagnosis in the first instance, then it allows the genetic interrogation, if you like, to be more specific. One of the issues is we sometimes get what is termed variants of uncertain significance. And that is to say that your genes are different from mine, Jim. So, you know, we don't know if that's just a variant that's normal and natural, or whether it's a pathological or disease-causing mutation that's going to cause somebody's life to end sooner than it should.
Professor Martin Stiles is with us. So you liken the process to detective work. I mean, the guidelines that you have now, if you can assemble the teams, can help understand which tests to conduct and clues to collect from a patient to potentially save other family members from the same fate.
That's right. I mean, the way you describe it, you make it sound like CIS New York, but I can tell you it's somewhat less glamorous. But yes, we do. And we use the advice of our clinical geneticists and the pathologists. And there's a lot of expertise, you know, around the country about this. And I think New Zealand has been, you know, is in the situation where we've actually been a little bit ahead of the rest of the world in terms of this multidisciplinary team approach. And it goes across traditional referral boundaries. I mean, you could imagine if you have a family, you know, somebody might live in Timaru, someone lives in Whangarei, someone lives in Hamilton, where I am. And so you need a national coordinated network. And we do have that in the New Zealand Cardiac and Inherited Disease Group network.
Okay. So following a positive test, for example, those family members can then receive advice and treatment to help obviate sudden death for them.
Yeah, that's right. So if we can find a cause in their relative, we can then, what we generally do is we then, say we find a genetic cause for long QT syndrome, which is one of the more common ones that we deal with. So we might find a mutation in a gene that we know causes long QT syndrome, and then we would test the first degree relatives of that person. So that is their parents, their siblings, and their children.
I don't know about long QT syndrome, so how does that manifest?
The heart has to recover electrically after every beat, and it takes a little longer to recover electrically after every beat, so that if you get an extra beat landing in just the wrong place, some of the heart is excitable and some of the heart is still refractory to excitation. Gosh, I'm really getting quite technical here. But what it sets up is a really nasty rhythm where the heart output stops, complete cardiac output cessation, and the patient collapses.
Right, gotcha. Okay. So you can discover these things, you can discover predilections to what might happen in the future, and these guidelines would have an impact in all sorts of ways, wouldn't they? And not just on personal health, but, I don't know, employment prospects. You might tell someone never play rugby again, all sorts of implications.
Yeah, lots of implications. So one of the things about this document, what we've tried to do is really emphasise the importance of the psychological care of patients who've survived a cardiac arrest, or for families who've lost a loved one. That's really important. And the other thing is genetic counselling. For instance, if you have a malignant cardiac rhythm problem, probably a helicopter pilot is not the job for you,
right?
Or a deep sea diver. And we have actually had, you know, there's a case in the country where a person had literally just finished their helicopter training, only to find through cascade testing, which is when we test the relatives of somebody who's found with a disease, that he had some nasty condition. And, you know, you can see also, we sometimes have a conversation about life insurance or health insurance. So when you have somebody's family in the clinic, you might say to them, do you have life insurance? And if they do not, perhaps before you test them for this condition, they may wish to take out life insurance, because the life insurance, of course, you have to declare what you know about yourself, and you can't declare what you don't know, so perhaps before we test is the time best to take out that insurance. In investigating genetic abnormalities, we can find out things like non-paternity. So the person they think their father is not their father. And let me tell you, that can be quite a difficult discussion to have. And we're quite, as you can imagine, discreet about who we talk to about that and before we embark on the testing.
You're talking about things, areas that families might not completely want to know about now too, aren't you?
That's right. And we deal with families who have split and, you know, there's acrimonious relationships between families. But I think what you have to try and do is think about the next generations and put it to the families that what they're doing in investigating their genetic disorder is helping future generations. And that generally brings people around to a common goal.
These guidelines are especially relevant here in New Zealand, aren't they? For each person diagnosed with a sudden death from an inherited cause in this country, about 2.5 family members are identified as having the same condition?
Yeah, that's right. So what we've found that, you know, if you take an age group between 1 and 35, we can generally find a diagnosis, a genetic diagnosis, in about 30% of those people. But having found that diagnosis, we get 2 or 3 people per family that we can protect from the same problem.
So there'll be families out there, lots of them probably, with sudden deaths in the family tree, the people with those lines drawn across them, as you say, and maybe they've never thought much about it and they should start thinking about it now if they stand back and have a look at how people have died in the past.
Yeah, that's right. Certainly if there are young deaths, you know, even cot deaths or even intrauterine deaths and deaths in unexplained in young people, then sure, we do like to hear about them and we can investigate them. You know, without wanting to completely swamp our service, having put this out on national radio, we sometimes get those stories from patients and they just want to know answers.
Okay, so obviously you don't want to be besieged by people, but people can contact you.
That's right. So we have a website. It's cidg.org.nz. That's the Cardiac Inherited Disease Group. And you can see what we do, the sort of conditions we have. We have information leaflets for patients. We have information for clinicians about how to get hold of us. And so that would be the starting point, I think, for anybody who's interested in this field.
One thing puzzles me. We have sudden cardiac arrest, SCA, but there's also sudden unexplained death, SUD, and they are presumably not the same thing. So do people drop dead, as it were, out of the blue without heart problems necessarily being involved?
That's right. So for instance, sometimes people may die from epilepsy for a very long and uncontrolled seizure. There are people who have aneurysms that may burst that would usually be detectable at a post-mortem. So someone who dies unexpectedly or is usually classed as sudden unexplained death, and then if we can find a cardiac cause, they become sudden cardiac death.
And a heart arrhythmia may be prevalent in other family members, and would a predisposition to aneurysms also be prevalent in family trees?
Yes, I think so. I think there is a familial connection with aneurysms, but this would not be something that the Cardiac Inherited Disease Group would investigate. It would be probably other branches of medicine.
Okay. So it's groundbreaking, all right, in terms of a protocol and a way forward. What do you want to happen now, Martin?
Well, what we'd like to happen is that this international best practice document gets, you know, adopted within New Zealand and around the world. But the difference with this document is that actually we're potentially helping people we've never met, and it may be in countries that we're never going to visit. So, you know, and it's worth putting the effort in, I think, to provide an international framework so that worldwide the care and investigation of sudden death is improved.
And it was your baby, and I think a lot of the work was done while you were on sabbatical from the Waikato DHB last year. So congratulations on what you've achieved. Appreciate your time.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Jim. And I would encourage people to visit our website at cidg.org.nz to look at the information and think how they may wish to help. For those in the South Island where they're underrepresented, if they could lobby for this, that would help us, you know, improve the care to the whole country.
Very good, and all the best for rolling out that care. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Jim. Pleasure to talk.
Professor Martin Stiles.